Case number 08-5435 et al. United Technologies Corporation, Pratt & Whitney Division Appellant versus United States Department of Defense et al. Ms. Millett for the appellant, Ms. Donnelly for appellees.
May it please the court, Patricia Millett representing the appellants in this case, United Technologies Corporation, the Pratt & Whitney Division, and Sikorsky Aircraft Corporation. In this case, the government proposes to release hundreds of detailed pages of audit and investigation reports that the district court found in agreement with us will reveal proprietary manufacturing and quality control processes. The fundamental flaw in that decision by the agency appears at two levels, and those are both the levels prescribed by this court in its en banc critical mass tests. There are two prongs for determining whether or not a disclosure is improper when you have mandatorily disclosed information under Exemption 4 of FOIA. Those two prongs are whether there's a likelihood of substantial competitive harm or whether there is a likelihood of impairing the government's access to information. At both levels,
critical mass is talking about information that was voluntarily turned over, correct?
Critical mass set the standard for both. It said that when it's voluntary information, the test is not those two prongs. It is simply whether there is a custom of non-disclosure in the industry. But critical mass specifically reaffirmed the National Parks two-prong test as to mandatorily disclosed information. And those two prongs are where
Your burden is to show that disclosure would cause substantial competitive harm to your competitive position?
Would likely cause either of two prongs. Either one is sufficient in its own right. Either to show a likelihood, not exactitude, a likelihood of substantial competitive harm or a likelihood of impairing the agency's access to information in the future.
The first one, you say that what the agency's proposing to release is confidential manufacturing process design, quality control processes, strengths and weaknesses. Now, as I understand it, the agency is not proposing to release your responses to the corrective action reports. Is that correct?
The difficulty is that
that's a yes or no.
Well, it is. That is what they say. I'll give you a yes. That's what they say. What the test they apply, the standard for that is what is relevant here. And they said what they would delete is to the extent that these reports quoted or described in detail our processes. And when we said they're still revealed even when you take out the quotes because there's paraphrases, or more importantly, it's critical to understand how these work. When the government goes through these investigations and says, if you didn't comply with X, Y, or Z, that's not a governmental standard that's being applied. That is our proprietary quality control standard. So when you look at these reports in the appendix, particularly the sealed appendix, what you see is it'll say requirement. And there it will describe our quality control process. And they deleted, for the most part, they didn't even get all of that. And we told them, you've missed things under your own standard. Even under your own test, you miss things. They didn't respond to that. But even apart from their own standard, they say, here's the requirement. They redact that. And then they leave in the discussion. Now, when the requirement says do X, and you take that out, but you leave in the discussion that says you didn't do X, you've revealed through the back door what you redacted through the front door. That is precisely our problem. And that's what's wrong with their test as a matter of law. They said, and this is their rationale, the description I think that you gave, Judge Rogers, was a more anecdotal one of it. What they say at page A269, A131 is we'll take out quotes and in details descriptions. And that is insufficient. The test under critical mass, the test under this court's precedence, under Canadian Commercial Corporation, the test is whether there will be affirmative use of proprietary information by competitors. And particularly in an industry like this, where you have highly sophisticated and highly competitive businesses at each other's throats, and using FOIA, as this court knows, to obtain competitive information, revealing proprietary processes, and that's not my assessment. The district court agreed. Blue brief addendum, page 12, page 26. The district court agreed that our proprietary processes would be revealed. And the district court simply echoed the government in saying, putting the label embarrassment on that. When a company comes back, when it comes forward, as this court said in Occidental, when it comes forward and shows a risk of competitive harm, it is reversible error for the agency simply to respond with a conclusory label. Now, there the conclusory label was no competitive harm. Here it's even worse. They didn't even address the relevant legal inquiry. They simply slapped the label embarrassment on it. That doesn't work. That doesn't work. The embarrassment comes from the fact that level three cars were issued, that we shut down operations, that problems were found. That's out there. You know why? The FOIA doesn't stop them from releasing this information within the government. All of our government clients know that. It's public record that level three cars were issued. Other companies that, or governments that may want to hire us, they know that information. The embarrassment is out there. The problem here is that our proprietary processes are being revealed, and the government's answer, which is legally insufficient, was not to explain that this wouldn't affirmatively be used by competitors in this highly competitive industry. Their answer was to say, as long as we take out the quotes or the details, we aren't even going to address your concerns.
Well, I'll ask the government about that, but that's not what I understood their position to be in the district court. I thought they were not going to release your responses at all, and I may have just misunderstood. The second question I have is, if I were to go through the sealed appendix, would I somewhere find exactly the words that you are objecting to, as distinct from your brief where it says, you know, these broad statements about processes are going to be revealed?
Two things. In the public appendix is our proposed redactions. And so if you compare those two, you would actually find those things.
Oh, I have to do the comparison.
But then, I mean, I'd be happy to provide more particularized examples.
Yeah.
But I don't think this court is the appropriate place to do the comparison. I think the question is they applied the wrong legal test. And to get back to your first question and the predicate for this one, I want to make sure I'm clear. The problem here is not our responses being out. The problem is the government's analysis. It's when the government says requirement X, and then it's not our response, it's the government that says you didn't do X. That's what I'm concerned about, really, not that our responses aren't out. So I'm sorry if I misunderstood. The problem here, and this is where the government doesn't dispute this, when we came in and said, you're still revealing it. I mean, if you look at sealed appendix, page 86, all they did was redact the number for our process. But the paraphrase of exactly what our process is right there. And it's not just the actual quality processes. When you're going through these, you start talking about what we're doing at particular stages, what tools we use, what equipment we use, what processes we use. And there are words there that may not look consequential to people outside the industry, but they reveal how we make engines and how we make helicopters.
I have just a practical question. If I were a competitor of your client, why couldn't I just buy an engine and break it down and see how you put it together?
Because it's
very expensive, I understand that, but just get over that hurdle for a moment.
Right, there's a practical answer and a legal answer. The legal answer is this court's decision in Center for Auto Safety versus NHTSA, which said the fact that someone could buy something in the market alone does not mean it's not still propriety if it would take the type of high-level expertise and expense.
That's your legal answer,
and the practical answer is these are military engines.
So
when they're sold under, yes, they're generally sold to government. When the government, as we all know, doesn't let people come onto the Army base and buy these. We don't sell these to Lockheed. And there's a reason we wouldn't. Even when we sell them to other people, they're under export controls, under licensing agreements to protect our proprietary capacities.
So one would think that the Department of Defense would not want to release things that would jeopardize our national security, much less our defense effectiveness and capability. Is that not correct?
What one would think that, and again, we're not invoking an Exemption 1 national security argument here.
I understand, but I'm just trying to understand in terms of your attacking the district court's analysis, saying that there will be competitive harm. And what I'm trying to understand is it's captured under the word embarrassment, but there is a difference under the exemption in terms of what it means to show substantial competitive harm. And that's the distinction I'm trying to be clear that I understand here.
Right, and the distinction here is the revelation of processes, and I think you're absolutely right that this is the problem on the impairment prong, where the government dead on refused to analyze. When we said you're going to have impairment problems because we've had very collaborative processes, government officials are essentially embedded with the companies, and they shadow our auditors, and they're there on the industry line with us at every minute, and they're at our meetings. That's all been predicated on understandings of confidentiality. We could say to the government, we're concerned, they say the Trade Secrets Act. Don't worry. There we are.
Can you even raise that? I mean, the government's satisfied that they'll get the information they need to carry out their responsibilities.
Again, I have two responses to that. First of all, again, the legal one in Washington Post versus HHS, this court, and this was the flip side, so let me be clear. I don't want to mischaracterize. There, the court specifically said it's going to reveal an agency's statement that it will impair its ability to get to information, that you don't simply have unthinking acceptance of that. These are objective tests adopted by the court as rules of law, and they will be reviewed under the APA. And by the same token, if you're going to review one side of the legal test, you have to review the other side of the legal test. As Judge Bates said in Canadian Commercial Corporation, this is not a blind acceptance, an unthinking acceptance. That's not how objective rules of law work. But I also think it's more than that. I don't think this is something that's meant for the agency itself simply to throw away, because this is congressional judgment, and there has to be at least some public interest concern about what's going to happen to the cooperative relationship that allows enormous access to information in this process. But I also think it's very important to keep in mind when you're talking about access here, this is a very narrow ruling we're asking for here. It's not, in fact, that the agency came back and said, we think we'll be able to get all the information we're already getting. They said, this is mandatory information. We'll continue to get mandated information. No more analysis required. To state that is to be in the teeth of this court's critical mass rule. This standard of impairment only applies when the information is mandatorily disclosed. So when the agency's answer is, it's not affected because this was mandatorily disclosed, is to defy the test. It's not to apply the test. I agree that if they had actually analyzed the issue, they would be entitled to enormous deference on that. But this is an independent prong for withholding information prescribed by this court as an objective test, and they didn't apply it. They simply said, because it's mandatory, it won't be a problem. Now, in Washington Post, again, this court was quite explicit that it's not that simple. Because when you suddenly have government revealing information, companies will, as we've said here, we'll start having to find exactly where that mandate is. In Washington Post, they said if there's going to be room for interpretation about the scope of the mandate, that can lead to impairment. That's exactly this case. They keep saying this. What is this information that they're entitled to? That will be a matter of enormous debate. We haven't had to do that because our government has respected confidentiality for decades until this very surprising decision. And when they respected it over all of these years, and then suddenly simply say it's mandated, they have to define the it. In this very case, there were disputes about whether they could have surprise audits as opposed to pre-planned audits. Could they bring in cameras or not? And certainly the ability of them to shadow our auditors through every stage of the manufacturing process will have to be revisited. All of the information they have is not mandated. And to police that line will require the very impairment that the test seeks to capture. And I think it, at a minimum, reversal and remand is required because they didn't even apply the test. It cannot be an application of that prong to say that when it's mandated, we have no further analysis to do, particularly in a case like this where the regional office said it's going to be impaired. our access is going to be impaired. Those people who are on the ground dealing with this every day said it will be impairment. There will be impairment.
It's just not the type of impairment against which the statute protects you. That's the argument that's being made.
Oh, no. There's only on competitive harm do they say that. They don't say this is the type of impairment. They simply say it won't be impairment because it was mandatory. But they don't say that the type of impairment that we... What the type of impairment is whether you're going to have to compel disclosures instead of be able to getting them on a voluntary basis, police it around the lines of exactly what is mandatory. This is this court's decision in Washington Post, right? Where they say you don't have the type of harm, where the district court said that, it was talking about the competitive harm. And there it simply put on the label embarrassment like the agency did without grappling with the district court's finding, the irony of it on the same page that we're revealing proprietary processes. And if I could reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
I want to ask you, have we ever applied in the reverse FOIA scenario the impairment prong?
This court has not in the reverse FOIA scenario. Judge Bates did in Canadian Commercial Corporation, but this court didn't.
So we have never recognized, whether you want to call it standing or whatever, we have never recognized in a reverse FOIA, once the agency has said it's not impaired, that someone else, including ourselves, can question it.
I think the yes is the short answer to that, but I do think in this case, it's a very, very narrow rule that we're asking for, and that is that the agency, before that, even that, it's, I don't think there's any article freestanding. I think there's obviously enormous deference when they analyze it. Here, they didn't analyze it. They simply, in the teeth of critical mass, said, because it's mandatory information, there can't be harm. Critical mass said the opposite. It said the rule only applies when there's a mandatory disclosure of information. So at a bare minimum, it cannot be sufficient.
Critical mass is a FOIA, not a reverse FOIA.
No, I'm not saying that there's been a holding from this court in a reverse FOIA case, but it adopted a test for Exemption 4. And remember, Exemption 4 is Cook's.
Where it applies. That's the question I have, whether the impairment prong even applies in the reverse FOIA. National Parks was a FOIA. Every other case that's talked about impairment has been a FOIA, not a reverse FOIA. And the difference is, the agency has made the decision in the reverse FOIA. This is not going to impair our ability. And the Seventh Circuit said about judicial review, who are we to question this quintessentially managerial decision?
The important thing to keep in mind is that the two-prong Exemption 4 test is meant to enforce two things, Congress's judgment about the balance under Exemption 4, the interests it was serving, and of course that's coextensive with the Trade Secrets Act. It cannot be enough for an agency to simply refuse to apply it. If they had said here why they think they'll still get it in the terms this court discussed in Washington Post versus HHS, why it's not a problem, why we'll be able to get this information beyond simply saying because it's mandatory. I think otherwise you're resigning it to a test that's only enforced one way. And if the idea is agency deference, then there should be just as much deference when they say we will be harmed as when we say we won't. When the agency says we will be harmed, this court has not simply blindly accepted that. It has scrutinized it and it has analyzed it. That's the Washington Post case. I'm not aware of any legal rule, particularly one here where it's addressing a congressional balance. I think the agency has an obligation to the public interest, to the broader governmental interest, to at least undertake the analysis and simply, instead of simply saying it's mandatory, we're not going to look further. And that is the fundamental problem on that prong.
All right, your time's up. Ms. Connelly, or Donnelly?
May it please the court, Kate Donnelly for the Department of Defense and the Defense Contract Management Agency. This case is actually about what the agency knew and what they did with that information when they were determining whether this release of this information would impair their ability to collect such information in the future, and when it determined that it would not cause competitive harm. In this case, when the appellants provided detailed information about information that they thought was exempt from under Exemption 4, the agency redacted. For instance, the photos that were at issue in this question.
They say you didn't do enough. That was the thrust of counsel's argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
The right people on the other side will piece all this together.
Yes, Your Honor. The question is, though, did the agency, they're not lay people. They it's evident in their correspondence that they listened to what appellants were saying, that they considered it, and that they made a reasonable decision. In fact, it was an iterative process. At first, the agency did consider what was voluntary and what was mandatorily provided. It was different. At the beginning, they said, we shouldn't release this. This could harm our ability to collect in the future. But after another iteration, it was determined that there were separate parts of information that were mandatory, parts that under the contract, the Defense Contract Management Agency could walk in to Sikorsky or Pratt & Whitney, walk on their floor, and take notes as to their results of their inspection. Those parts are the parts that are released. It was determined that there were voluntary parts. It's not mandatory that the appellants provide a written response to these requests for action. Those have been redacted. The photos, for instance, the agency pointed out, I'm sorry, the appellants pointed out, that these photos include images of the F-119 engine inlet and exhaust system with sufficient design detail, such as to provide individuals information on P&W competitive sensitive details. Compare that to their rationale for competitive harm. Release will cause substantial damage to Pratt's competitive position. When the appellants were able to articulate a reason that this, how this would harm them or how this would release some protected information, the agency redacted it. Unless there are further questions, Your Honor.
I do have one, and that is, I know these level three CARs get distributed, right? My question is this. Is there any obligation on DOD to distribute these CARs when they reach the level three level to any other agencies or any dissemination or distribution of them? Do they stay in defense?
Your Honor, if I could go outside what's in the record for a moment as far as whether the DCMA has released this type of information under FOIA, since this...
No, I'm not. I'm asking about whether there's some counsel for regulatory something or other that DOD has to send certain CARs once they reach level three outside of the agency, or do you know?
Your Honor, I just looked at the procedure for a level three CAR, and I don't recall that it said it goes anywhere besides in the DCMA or in the appellants or the company's distribution.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We request that you affirm the lower court's decision.
All right. Does Ms. Millett have any time? Why don't you take a couple minutes?
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Again, the problem here was that the entire proprietary process is involuntary information were going to be released. There was an iterative process. And the problem is that they came back with the wrong legal test. And they said, if we take out the quotes and the details, that's all. And when we said that isn't enough to protect our proprietary processes, and the district court agreed, it is insufficient then to not have any answer to our assertion of competitive harm, that when you reveal our proprietary processes, that they will be used by competitors in this industry both to change their processes and to hurt us in the bidding process. There's been no, and there still has been no answer to that whatsoever.
You don't like it.
Well, no, the answer has not been, the answer is, they label it embarrassment, I'll give you that. They have not given a responsive answer under the law, which said, because something could be embarrassing, I think that's wrong for the reasons I said, it could be embarrassing and still entail the affirmative use of proprietary information by a competitor. That's this court's legal test.
Give me an example of what that is, because usually we look at, well, if it's just embarrassment or reputational harm or something, that's not what we mean by affirmative use. you know, to create competitive harm. So give me an example of what you...
Absolutely. And this, the embarrassment that you got a level three car, that there were lots of things found wrong, that you had to shut down your operations, that's all out there. That couldn't be protected. We couldn't stop them from releasing it. We couldn't stop them from releasing, we found 50 things wrong. All right. What we, the harm here is when they actually start to reveal our processes. If you go to SEAL Appendix page 86.
Yeah, I went there.
Okay. And it's sealed, so I hope you'll allow me to speak a little bit elliptically. But number 14.
We're on 86.
Page, the sealed appendix, page 86, number 14.
Right.
Okay. And there it says requirement. It says requirement, and I think they just redacted a number there. And what is there? There is our proprietary requirement. Here's what we do at this stage. All right. At page, right across at page 87, number 15.
In other words, what I was trying to understand when I read that is, well, why wouldn't anybody do that?
Oh, but exactly how we do it. This is the thing. Each company designs exactly its own quality control process. When you do it, at which stage, exactly which you do, and then it be requires that it be checked, see that certain way, all right, when it has to be done, how they're handled.
86?
Yes. Right after the black B4, the second black B4 requires that the blank right. be blank inspected, all right? And then across, another example right across.
I thought, why wouldn't anybody do that?
That when you're dealing with, when you have to do it as opposed to hourly, daily, weekly, the problem, right, that the MT&E be checked when? All right. Not everyone, as far as we know, again, we don't have access to their processes. Not everyone may do it where we do it for calibration blank, the three words there right before the black box. And how it be done, again, there's a L-Y word there, I suppose maybe mechanically. And I know this seems very in the weeds, but that's what our competitors want. The next page, all right, number 15. Now there you see they actually redacted more of the requirement, but they found a blank, blank workstation, right? The fact that we have those blank, blank workstations as opposed to making things outside and bringing it in is part of our proprietary process, right? Not everyone does it that way, all right? On page 158, and I'll just...
Can I just ask one thing about on 86? So are you asking that what not be disclosed, the entire first paragraph or both paragraphs of number 14?
Both of them, because then when it starts talking about how much it is, when it talks about how off-center it was, those exact configurations and measurements are significant to the industry. Because they're not saying that the government itself has some general standard requiring that it was approximately blank pounds off-center. That's our decision. How much it can be off-center or not is our own decision. Another company may do it its own, a different way, right? This pervades this problem. And I think, again, they might say we can have some lines in and some not. They didn't engage in that analysis. They simply said if it's not through the front door in quotes and in details, we're going to label it embarrassment when it comes in through the back door. But there are some incredibly important things on 158. This is the Sikorsky one. Item number 65, and this one's repeated about four times in here.
Okay.
All right, let me get to the page with you. If you go to number, see, so they have item numbers on the left here, number 65.
Right.
Okay. It's discussing that there's a certain kind of shield. You see that? There's a problem with the shield. The fact that we have that shield is, as far as we know, proprietary. We don't know that anyone else has one of those shields. That same problem shows up about five other times in these papers. At a minimum, they haven't responded to our concerns. As the district court agreed, the proprietary processes are being revealed. All they said was, if it's not a quote or in detail, and that was their test, A269, A131, that's the agency's, not the lawyers in the court, the agency's rationale for where they stopped in caring about the revelation of proprietary processes. That's not the right place to start. It's what, stop, whether it's affirmative, whether it can be affirmatively used by competitors.
What
this is valid.
At
A269 and A131. There's a Pratt one and a Sikorsky one. All right? And in 269, they said, we remove the things that quoted your provisions. Now we know, or describe them in detail. Now we.
269 and what was the other one?
269 and A131. Okay? At 269, what they said we'll take out when we said proprietary processes are going to be revealed are the quotes or in detail discussions. Now, I don't think they've even done that from what I showed you on page 86. But even when you take out the quotes, you're still leaving in how we make it and what our standards are. And even if one...
These raised?
Well, they were raised in the sense that there's a lot more, and so we gave them our redactions. And then we flagged specific ones in the letter. There's a page 142. One of...
for the agency?
They were flagged in the sense that they were redacted along with a lot of other redactions, and then at page 142 is a letter where we specifically cite a couple EG examples, and those are a couple more I haven't done to you. Those are ones on page 82 and 83 of the appendix. So we warned them that, and that's where we warned them that even under your own standard, you haven't got everything. And then we said, there's a lot more. Here's what we think needs to be redacted. Now, what normally happens, you're right, Judge Rogers, is that there's some more careful look by the agency, and we can go, no. Now, again, they are, for some part, sophisticated. We would expect they would know when these particular processes are proprietary or not, but they simply put on the blinders and refuse to go to the next level. All we're asking is that there should be a remand to the agency to go through that level.
But they made all these redactions. So, I mean, they didn't just reject you out of hand.
No, what all these redactions were what they called the quotes and details. They did not respond at all when we said the proprietary processes, and the district court agreed, can be revealed other than through quotes. And when it's done at this massive a level, that is substantial competitive harm, and an agency needs to analyze it more carefully. And I think a remand for them to do that, to have this iterative process under the affirmative use of proprietary information test, not clouded by the violation of an accidental decision in this court that says, is your motivation to avoid embarrassment, which I think is what clouded their analysis here. Let's take that away, as we said in accidental. Let's be careful about this stuff. Exemption 4 requires, as this court said in CNA Financial Corporation, careful decisions by the agency. And that's all that we're asking in this case.
All right.
Thank you.